Hi, everyone, and welcome to the DC Comics News Weekly Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Singleton. I am actually accompanied right now by the amazing Bruno. He'll explain amazing later. But more importantly, we're accompanied by a verbal contribution that cannot ever be replicated. I'm talking about the amazing Flicky Fashions, Mr. Brad Flicky. How you doing today, sir?
I'm doing good.
All right, so you will hear some snoring from Bruno. It's not Brad or I having intestinal issues or, you know, trying to disguise them. It's mostly going to be Bruno. It'll be this kind of light snore. And and he does get intestinal issues. I'm not blaming it on him. It's not some sort of excuse. He's a French bulldog. You know this about them if you know anything about them. But with that disclaimer out of the way, yeah, I'm talking about you, buddy. Sorry. It's okay. There's no shame. There's no shame, really. We have an amazing list of stories to kick off for you, curated, cultivated by our one and only Mr. Josh Rayner, editor-in-chief at DC Comics News, which is why we always have such amazing choices for our movies, television, streaming, comics, even some other, sometimes some other. You want to stick around for that. I've been warned I might be getting cut off, so I'm hoping I'm centered. Here's to hoping, because our first story is one that, well, it's going to get a lot of focus. It's the fact that there is rumor about a narrowing of the casting choices for Superman Legacy. We're getting this one from Batman News. Superman Legacy cast hunt reportedly narrowing. Now, I'm not sure how we feel about this reporting, so I'm going to ask, we're back. I'm going to ask Mr. Brad Filicki. Brad, what'd you think about this? Hey, we got a cat.
Yeah. I said there might be a cat joining. I don't know if you can see.
Oh, yeah. Nope. Totally. Thankfully, Bruno's not, I think, conscientious of the formatting here, so it's not going to cause him to lunge at the screen, I hope. But with both of our pets accompanied and the, sort of relaxing, reflecting that comes with that, what do you think about this revelation that, it might be narrowing? Is this reporting saying that it really is? What did you think about this story and whether or not we are actually narrowing the search?
I think that we are narrowing it, and I think that that's a good thing, especially given the writer's strike. Like I mentioned, I think that this is going to delay some of these projects. So the fact that this keeps moving along, it's good. As far as who they are talking about, I'm just going to pardon me here while I read this list. We have David Cornesmith from Pearl, which I've never seen, but he does have the look. And I still think that they're going to go with a relative unknown for Clark Kent, and I think he fits that bill. So I think that as of now, that could be a likely choice. I think it makes sense. Lois Lane have some interesting names. Emma Mackey and Phoebe Denever. Now, I've never seen Bridgerton, but Phoebe is on Bridgerton. Emma is on Sex Education and Barbie. I did see a pre-screening of Barbie, but I can't really talk about what I've seen, but I will say that she was good in it, and she has the look. We have Rachel Brosnahan, and I think she would make a great Lois Lane, but I do share a concern that they said in this article that she may be a little too old. Now, 32 is not old, and it's not old for Lois Lane, but the fact that this is supposed to be a younger Superman that we're going to see in this movie, so she might be a little old, but she did apparently give a great audition. So I think she could definitely, if you've ever seen Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, you'll know that she's got the chops. Same way with Samara Weaving. She's shown a lot of range she did everything from Wayne's World to that horror movie where she was on her wedding day, she was the only one. They had to hunt her down. I forget what that was called, but she was really good in that. She's shown range, and I think she could do a good job, too. So that was – and moving on to Lex Luthor and Nicholas Holt. which I did not know until I read this article that he was one of the last names considered for Batman as well, and that Warner Brothers really likes him. So that could be likely. I could see him having fun playing the villain. He was great in he was good in Renfield most recently. He was great in Mad Max. He's got the range too, so I would like to see him play a villain. So I'd be down for that. But these are only rumors, and we've got a long way to go. So, but it's still nice to get the names. So I'll say that. What about you?
I would definitely think that we've got a long way to go. I like the interest in these names. I'm intrigued by the fact that, you know, there's already been sort of a couple of revelations, like you pointed out, going with Nicholas Holt, someone who gave a powerful performance in Mad Max, someone who's also showed great range recently in, I think it's Great or The Great. I think it's a Hulu series focusing on Catherine the Great, and he co-stars with her, or guess, I'm not sure how that works. But I do know that he is showing some comedic range there, which I think you need that little bit of comedic timing, that little bit of wildness that Lex Luthor can display when he's going from either cold and dismissive to, you know, for thinking about All-Star Superman, he was, you know, a bit playful and coy and sort of like, I've been doing this a lot. I've seen a lot. I've, you know, I've had the opportunity. I'm intrigued by the idea that though we're going with a All-Star Superman reference material, but a younger Superman, which in that movie or in that book, you know, this is a Superman who's been around for a while, who's had all these different accomplishments. So I'm wondering what the blending of that will be like and how that's going to inform the choice of whether or not a certain age is too old for an actor to participate or, you know, be seriously considered. I do think that there's going to be a lot of questions about that being part of the process, just given the desire to continue to see actors, no matter their age, perform. Recently, you know, it was Michelle Yeoh saying, look, they were telling me to stop after a certain age and look at other roles or just not really get into it anymore, and yet disproved everyone with a recent Academy level performance. So I think there's going to be a lot to see coming from not only a couple of other things like you mentioned. These are great names that people know. Some people know, not everyone. But what are the names of the rising stars that maybe are less well known and certainly not ones that they want to trot out because they might be even more serious contenders? So I always enjoy the value of a story that suggests some stuff like that and maybe leans to one or two likely possibilities like Holt. But then I also wonder, like, okay, but what what do you put to get people's attention while you do this at the same time? Now, I'm also going to keep that in mind because our next story, which we got from Comic Book and Superman Legacy's James Gunn, saying that he's got his own comments on the speculation that's going on around casting. So it's not as though there isn't some challenge to the story we just talked about. What did you think about this follow-up that we got from James Gunn regarding his response to the idea of casting speculation that's being made right now?
Yep. So he says no one has been cast. And one thing is interesting, he said he would never say that anybody auditioned unless they said it first. So Rachel Brosnahan must have said it somewhere on her social media or something that she auditioned, because he said, I'm not going to say anybody who auditioned. So that's interesting. And I find it funny that only one person has been cast. For sure. My thinking that it's probably Sean Gunn, because they generally team up. Sean Gunn was Rocket. He was Weasel in Suicide Squad. So I'm guessing that maybe Sean Gunn has a role, because James Gunn also said it's not a major player. It's not a character that people would recognize. So maybe it's a little cameo or something. But I think that James Gunn is in a position where he is constantly having to stay in front of these rumors. So kudos for him for still finding the time to do that with everything else that's going on. What about you?
I would imagine that there comes a point where you give enough just to sort of satisfy the continuing rounds of questions, but you always hold enough back to give a little bit more because you know they'll never be satisfied to a degree. There's always going to be this repeat. So it's like, okay, every once in a while, leave a little trail of breadcrumbs. It's not leading to anything concrete, but it does give enough for people to do something with, whatever it might be. If it's only to say, well, this adds to the continued speculation of what may or may not be happening. I'm interested in the possibility of Sean Gunn. I did not consider the relationship as you described it. You know, the fact that they've had times working together and how recent they've had collaboration on a project. So keeping that in mind, I can definitely see that possibility. It does make me question the Nicholas Hoult idea. You know, I appreciate that Warner Brothers is interested, but he said that he wouldn't comment unless someone said it first. Now, one thing I would wonder about is, okay, well, what if these actors don't say it, but someone who knows them, PR, manager, someone else who feels like it doesn't hurt to get that information out there because of what it might lead to for the actor, either for that project specifically or consideration for other projects where studios might be like, oh, well, they were considered for this. We should consider them for this. So I don't know the card game that well, you know, that's being played here. But I do feel like there's always one or two reasons behind these moves. So I do like the fact that Gunn's coming out in front. I feel like he's always going to be taking that step of, yeah, you're better off not knowing. So here, I'm going to give you something that's not going to tell you very much, but I'm going to give you something. And I hope he keeps tap dancing for as long as he can. Totally reminds me of Richard Gere from Chicago. And hey, as long as he can keep it up and continue to provide success afterwards, keep tapping, buddy. Keep tapping. With that in mind, we do have one more of our movie news stories coming your way. And that's a Flash NBA spot that teases the film's secret villain. All right. What did you think about this revelation and the tease?
Well, we kind of already knew this already.
Because, so it's not so secret.
Well, we've seen I think it was the Funko Pop that they released of Dark Flash. So we kind of already knew that the character was going to be there. So that part wasn't a surprise. But I'm going to go back to what I said a few weeks ago, that they've been highlighting Zod a lot between the trailer and the TV ads. And I'm wondering if that's kind of like a bait and switch, that you're going to go into that movie thinking he's the major villain, but it's actually Dark Flash. And that's kind of what I'm leaning towards. So I'm glad that we're getting to see at least a little bit of it, because I've kind of wondered too why we haven't seen Dark Flash in the ads, other than that boot touching clip. So yeah, my theory is that he's actually not a secret villain, but the major villain.
I agree with that. I definitely see that happening. It also reminds me of those moments where things were intentionally done. I'm reminded of the movie Interstellar, in which it was only revealed at the time of the movie that Matt Damon was a character in the movie, that all when they were doing preview press, he never joined the cast because the whole point was to make his appearance a surprise. They knew that his value as a name and also his value as a name for the character he plays worked better as a surprise. So I would definitely say that you're demonstrating through your example right there what I think the whole point of that movie is going to be. And for audiences, is this idea of, if you're a villain, you don't, you know, I always love that great line, you know, in chess, we let the pawns go first. This idea of like, okay, well, you know, if you're going to get to your good guy, if you're going to hurt the good guy, you send up something that's going to wear him out, break him down a little bit. And then once he over maybe comes that, then exhausted, lost some energy, you make your big appearance because maybe you weren't quite sure you could beat him, but now you definitely feel like you can. Now you're going to have a Supergirl and maybe another Flash involved. We'll see how that plays out. Plus there's always the, you know, invincible, redoubtable Batman. So I think you're definitely on the right track, that Zod is that sort of like, yeah, just attack this guy. Go ahead. Strawman. Okay. You got him. Now I'm here. You exhausted, because now I'm going to kick your butt. And End of story. So it totally makes sense to me. And also, I would also love if there was just a little bit of a twist where it's like, let's say they defeat Zod, and then the Dark Flash shows up and it's like, well, now it's all bad. Now you messed up time even worse, so now I gotta show up. Like, it's almost like the consequences of defeating that enemy then leads to the deeper, you know, greater enemy behind it. So however they choose to play it out, I think it's going to be a fun ride. And I don't think the boot is going to ruin the story, because they haven't given us enough in the trailers to feel like any of that can be exposed. So good luck. You know, pick your favorite Dark Flash moment that can be recaptured in cinema. And best of luck to you. But I still think we're going to be surprised by this story. That's the fun part for me. Now, moving into our TV and streaming news, we do have some developments regarding Sean Gunn and the Creature Commandos. It's begun production. This appears to be an exclusive coming to us from Comic Book. Brad, it's started. You know, it seems like there has been very little lull to, you know, the progress and momentum for Sean Gunn since he's been kicking things off. What are your thoughts, my friend?
I think it's because this is the first series, the first glimpse we're going to get of his, James Gunn's vision for, was it Chapter One or what, The Gods and Monsters? So I'm excited that it's in production, because that means we're going to get to see it sooner rather than later. And it seems like everything was done before the writer's strike, so things can continue. And what I really liked about this article is that they said that there's actually already been recording done. So they've gone in and already done some voice work already. And that's great. And the talent's good. I mean, I love to see David Harbour come, you know, in anything. So I'm glad to see him being on it. Yeah, I'm excited for this one. And the quicker we get it, the better. What about you?
Well, the first thing that I got a kick out of is when you said I'm excited to see David Harbour, because, you know, it's one of the fun things about animation. You know, you still can picture, when you know the actors, you still can picture their faces, even though you're seeing the character. It's like you hear their voice and you know it's them, right?
Yeah, he's one of them, too, I think, for sure.
Oh, yeah. Very distinctive voice. Like, the moment I hear him, you know, I instantly picture him from one of his roles, you know, whether it was in the Black Widow movie, whether it was in Suicide Squad, whether it was Stranger Things. You know, he's just got one of those great characters, great voices. I love the fact also, though, that Sean Gunn's like, yeah, so we haven't really hung out because it's animation. So, you know, for the most part, they're recording either in their own location, at home, studios. I know a lot of things have changed since the shutdown and since we've all come back up. I like that he mentions we do get to learn more about the Weasel. That was pretty fun for me. And G.I. Robot, that's a really cool thing that we get to, like, you know, I like the idea of somebody getting excited about that kind of stuff. So, as you pointed out, we know that they've already had a chance to do some recording. And I'm also hopeful that the majority of work that they need to do can be done without too much effect from the writer's strike. But at the same time, I also feel like if there is a moment where they need to call on the writers, that'll be one of the first stories coming out, which is, hey, we're delaying things until the writer's strike is fixed because we need writers for this thing. And that would be just a fun little development that I think could put some pressure, because I think the leverage right now, the desire for people to see Gunn's universe being delayed by something like the writer's strike would only add to, you know, fix this already, guys, work out a good negotiation and get this solved. So I'm always intrigued by that possibility. I also like the fact that we can focus a little bit on this positive, because our next story moves us into a little disappointing, talking about the fact that there are new reports that cast doubt on whether or not Superman and Lois and Gotham Knights have actually been renewed. Talking about this one coming from Comic Book, you know, 1 minute you're up, 1 minute you're down. It's part of the roller coaster. What was your take on this one, Brad?
Yeah, it's sad. It's sad for Gotham Knights because it seemed to be doomed before it even started. There was a pretty bad reaction to the trailer. It came out right when all these shows were ending. So it was going to have a hard battle ahead of itself anyway. And I think it was better than a lot of people were expecting it to be. I've enjoyed it. And I'm going to finish out the first season. But I can't say that was unexpected. Superman and Lois, kind of the same thing. People really do like it. And as our next story will highlight, may not have seen the last of it. So my fingers are crossed. And again, I think the third season has been really strong so far. I think the cast is great. I like their versions of these characters, so I'd like to see it continue. So that's a bummer. But there's things on the horizon that we can get excited about too. So you gotta kind of roll with the punches sometimes, you know. And that's just I maybe it's just because I have a lot of hope for what we're gonna get as far as quality goes. That and in a way, all the CW shows were pretty high quality anyway. So we'll always have all that great years of television to go back and watch again and help other people discover. You know, there's still people out there that are discovering Buffy for the first time. And I expect that that's the same way people are now, you know, there's people out there that are just discovering Supergirl or Arrow or The Flash. And at least we got a lot of great TV out of the whole thing. What about you?
We did get some amazing TV. All started with Arrow. CW really branched out, embraced great characters like The Flash, Supergirl, Black Lightning, one of my favorite shows. Yeah, we really did some amazing things, and I was grateful for that. I also understand, you know, that there has been a general acceptance that things were shutting down as we were closing out one universe and beginning Sean Gunn's vision. And I also keep in mind the fact that when it comes to how important that is, you know, it's something that I think you get used to as you get a little bit older, this whole concept of, okay, you have to accept death and renewal. You have to accept closings, endings, and then beginnings. And they're not always the way you want them to be. They rarely are. You can't always control that destiny. I'm grateful for the shows that can, you know, have some control on their endings, like The Flash and some others like Arrow. But for those, as you pointed out, Arkham Knights was a surprise. I've been amazed at its, you know, the fact that it's continued on, that it shook off the concerns raised by the trailer and the teasers, and also the development of these characters and the growth that they've made. But I'm wondering, you know, I'm left with that hope that you describe for all the good things we have coming, and also for that idea of being able to still enjoy all this great content. The question now, as you point out in our next story, is where will we be enjoying that content? Where will it be potentially going to? Because HBO Max, it appeared to be the new home for so much of DC Warner Brothers streaming content as related to these characters. Now in our next story, we're moving into this idea that Superman and Lois may be leaving the CW for HBO Max. I'm hoping it's staying at HBO Max, but I'm also concerned about Max. The Max, this new blending that's going to be occurring at the end of May, of which the certainty regarding a lot of different titles has wavered, to say the least. So what do you think about the fact that Superman and Lois could be leaving CW for HBO Max? Could it potentially have a continuance there? They mentioned in the previous story we're just talking about now, and then we're moving away from, though, that it had a higher budget, larger audience, but it also cost more to produce. By comparison, all these factors come into what's your interpretation of this move to HBO Max?
It seems you know, I'd like to be hopeful, but I think it seems a little bit of a long shot at this point. But like you said, we got to see what happens with Max once it does, you know, debut. I'd be all for it if they wanted to continue it. And what's good is that James Gunn said, why end a good thing? Audience likes it. You know, everybody seems to like the show. Why would we end it? So he seems to be open to it continuing as well. And if CW has shut down the shows, but it still has that, like you said, that bigger audience, then I say go for it. But I'm not a bean counter, you know, at Warner Brothers, you know, weigh in the pros and cons of the whole thing. So all we can be as fans is have our fingers crossed and say, hope it continues. You know, like I mentioned in the previous story, the cast is great. And I think they did a really good job with that casting, and I think it would be a shame to not see them be able to continue on with the characters if, you know, if there's that audience for it. So fingers crossed, but I'm going to say it's a little bit of a long shot.
I can see that, definitely. I'm torn simply because I know that if HBO Max is, if the HBO Max content is going to continue on the Max, it's going to need new content. Certain shows will need to continue producing. Things like Titans have stopped, but there are other shows that they've had, The Last of Us and others that are on HBO Max, that I think fans are expecting more to come. How much of that can be DC-related Warner Brothers content? I'm not sure how the budgeting works for that. I'm not a bean counter either. But I would imagine that shutting down any and all content outside of movies for DC and Warner Brothers seems like an ill-fated decision. It seems like one of those where you're cutting off these revenue sources that have always thrived. It's a well-known belief, I would say almost fact, that DC's animation has been its shining star. It's been its strongest representation of DC's characters. The movies have done really well, but I feel like it's always, I mean, you look at, oh goodness, I almost had the little blank there, but you look at how quickly we went from a Teen Titans show that moved into a Young Justice show that was just gorgeous and has since grown, and the animated movies we've had. So I would like to see the possibility of maybe one or two live action shows continuing on. I don't know if it's possible, the bean counting and such, but I would imagine something would have to continue in the form of live action and animation for DC outside of movies in order for it to maintain its viability among fans. Otherwise, you're asking them to kind of like go on a fasting until the next movie comes out, and that's never served them well. Plus, animated shows like Harley Quinn, I think you would want to keep going. Other animated shows that have proven really successful, and there's an audience that will continue to subscribe for those new shows, those are going to be some of the ways forward. Yeah, I don't know. I'm interested in the fact that James Gunn is like, it's all going to be consistent, and yet, well, it's a good show, so it should go a little bit longer. Maybe we can waver and have a little bit of fun with the multiverse. We'll see how that shakes out. What I do know is, you know, these are the things we have to keep in mind when we get final decisions, that Ava DuVernay's overall deal with Warner Brothers Television has come to a close. This is one in which we had hoped to see all sorts of amazing projects. Her, Tom King, I mean, we were talking New Gods, we were talking big things. And that chapter appears to have closed. Who knows if it could ever, you know, pick up again at some point down the line. Thoughts on this one, my friend?
It's a bummer, but I almost think that her vision is almost too big to get shackled into being forced into James Gunn's vision of the DC universe. So it's almost to be expected. And I think we'd be in a different position if Naomi was able to go for a second season. And that's a shame that it didn't. But things like that was a hit to the deal. DMZ was good, but I think that was always set up to be a miniseries anyway. So even if that had been super successful, I mean, I guess if it had been super successful, they would try to get a second season. But, you know, it's just, I just wish it could have years ago gotten a better chance. That we could be talking about a New Gods movie right now before James Gunn even came into the picture. But I think with the way things are going, I think that it was bound to happen. And I did like the Naomi season, and I did like DMZ. I'd like to see more, but you know, we'll see. One thing I can say is that, you know, maybe she will come back because he does like those characters that aren't so well known. And I think that would, New Gods would be perfect for that. So maybe he would like to say, hey, maybe we can revisit this and somehow make it worth it for Ava DuVernay to come back. So we'll see. We'll see. You know, never. The thing is with fandom, you never say never. You know, I could have easily said you'll never see Michael Keaton come back as Batman, and here we are. So, you know, who knows? So, we'll see.
it all comes down to whether or not you really want to be eating crow, right? Do you really want to eat? Do you really want to find yourself making a meal of your own words, maybe an alphabet soup, however you choose to prefer them? But I mean, if it was me, if you want to go ahead and lay out some steaks and spell out I was wrong, I'm probably going to be just fine. With that in mind, I'm disappointed that Ava DuVernay's time has come to a close. Naomi was a gorgeous show. I had such great hopes for it. I thought it was doing wonderful things with what Bendis had already created with the mythos. I thought it was going so much further. And I think you have a really great point. You know, her vision was big. And it's almost one of those things of, this is the size of the universe. Does this fit into the universe? If it doesn't, we're going to accept that. And also, with her amazing talent, I would be surprised if James Gunn didn't say, hey, look, so that got bungled, but the opportunity's right now. Or, you know, I would love to hear that there was a conversation of, look, if we can get stage one right and get to this point of stage two, this is where the opening is. Can we check in with you? And even just leave it like that, so that if there's timing scheduling that works, because the idea of a New Gods just makes all the sense in the world. Bringing in Mr. Miracle. Yeah, go ahead, buddy.
Yeah, I was going to say that that's another bad thing about this writer strike, because that's going to delay that stage two that much longer. You know, James Gunn has said, you know, maybe we're going to find a spot for The Rock's Black Adam, but not in this stage. And the longer this first stage goes on, the less likely something like that's going to happen. So, but you're right, you know, there's always a second stage and those doors and windows that can be opened.
Yeah, I would love the idea of it happening. But as you pointed out, one of the things that's going to play a critical role will be whether or not the writer's strike goes on for a long enough period of time that the domino effect of delays creates complications that can't be overcome, or, you know, prevent this timing from working out for that possibility down the road. One of the things that's worth pointing out is our next story then, Netflix's The Sandman. It's season two, which was not to be called season two, but was still going to be the next chapter. It's been delayed. We've got an update from Neil Gaiman regarding the strike, but clearly now this is another project we can, you know, anticipate. Some sort of delays, how long? Well, also, it's going to depend on how long the strike goes and how long it takes for things to pick back up. What did you think about this update from Neil Gaiman?
Well, I love that he's come out and said that we will not hire scabs. We totally support the writers. First and foremost, that's the most important thing, because that's real life. So good for them for that support. I totally agree with that. I'm behind it. This does make me nervous, because I don't want Netflix to think that once the writer's strike is over, that they have to rush something out as quickly as possible. So they'll cut the season short, or they'll take less risks. Because as we talked about, when they said that they weren't necessarily going to call it season two, that leaves it all open for feature length, like kind of movie episodes, secretly dropped episodes. And I don't want to see that stuff get cut, especially when they've done such a good job of bringing in stuff from the source material in really interesting ways. I'd hate to see any of that be sacrificed moving forward, because some of the stories that we have to look forward to, like Seasons of Mist, I want as much on the screen from the book as possible. So it does make me nervous, but I'm glad that they are supporting the writers. What about you?
Yes, they should be supporting the writers. Anyone who has enjoyed the series and the books or anything else related to it knows one thing. It all comes from the imagination of the writer. And I would be surprised if someone like Neil Gaiman would say, oh yeah, all of that I, you know, sweated for and worked hard for, I'm going to turn around and, you know, sort of disregard and sort of leave unaccounted for. And I think the awareness, the conscientious responsibility that, yeah, you came up, you made your mark, now you have an opportunity to stand there for others, support them. I think it's a really great move. I understand the concern you describe. I was very conscious of what happened to the Hero Show from the season that was interrupted by the strike to when they picked it back up, and it fell apart. It lost all its cohesive, all its attempt at strategy. It tried to truncate what was a very long and complicated plot, and we suffered for it. The show suffered for it, yeah. Right? Great and loss.
That is an example that's come up again and again. Right. Look what happened to Heroes. It seems almost like every article I've read mentions Heroes and how it ruined that show.
It was tough. I remember distinctly, like, really enjoying the first season and really looking forward to the second, and then seeing what had happened and watching the strike go down. I was just getting into grad school and, like, thinking about my future in writing. I'm like, wow, how is this all going to work? You know, is this ever something I have to think about? But it was amazing to see these writers fight for it. You know, I remember those great speeches, Why We Fight and things like that, Why We Strike. I think those are recent enough that we can remember that. And as you point out, the consequences. I hope others keep those in mind when it comes to negotiations, when it comes to thinking about the industry, because the damage would be frustratingly disappointing for a great show like Sandman. I would also consider the possibility, too, if you're someone like Gaiman where you know you've got some loyal fans, to just say, hey, Netflix, you know what? We're going to do this right. We're going to take as long as it takes. It's going to be well done. We'll show it when it's ready. And that would be my hope. How many other shows have that same kind of pull? I don't know. But I'm hopeful. I'm encouraged. And maybe it's because I also know that we have great stories like our final TV and streaming news story. That is, we have the return of a favorite Flash. That's right. We're talking about Tom Cavanagh, as reported by Comic Book, will be returning to the series in its finale, as confirmed recently. I've got my own thoughts, as you know. Brad, what was your take on this development?
Yeah, I know you're the biggest Flash fan at DC Comics News, so I'm sure you got So I'm sure you got your two cents to say. I just will say that I've always thought that Tom Cavanagh was a really great actor, and he seemed like he was having so much fun on the show. And so he got to do so many different things on that show, the different characters, when he played the different, all the different timeline versions of the character. It was so much fun watching him work. So I'm glad he's coming back. It'd be a shame if we didn't get to see him. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Flag.
Thanks, brother. Yeah, it's been really fun. For those who've been keeping up with the series as its most recent developments, we've gone back to those storylines that were so prevalent in the first season or two. One, you know, who's Eobard Thawne? And then two, the sort of relationship between these two versions of the character. The most recent one, going back to that traumatic experience for Barry, losing his mom, the choices he has to make. Wonderful appearance by Wesley Shipp. Just great moment in that. One of my favorites. I love watching whenever he pops on. And it was just really fun because you had to wonder, like, okay, now that this episode has ended, what's next? How is the Reverse Flash going to continue playing in? One of the big parts that was so huge in part seasons one and two, and which came into play even now in this recent season, the run Barry run line from Tom Cavanagh. And as you point out, he appeared to have so much fun playing so many different versions of Wells, you know, all of these different computations, all these different variables, and the fun stories that came through it. Also really interesting involvement as the kind of pariah character in Crisis. And I enjoyed what he was capable of. I love how he's going to be coming back for the finale. I like the idea of his Reverse Flash, and also maybe we can see some other personalities. So as far as I'm concerned, man, when you're going to wrap things up and go for that big ending, why not bring the whole band back together? Like, why not? That's one of the great things about a final tour. Now, shifting out of TV and streaming, we have our great source content. I'm talking about Comic Book News. And I'm talking about the fact that it looks like Doomsday, that's right, the creature who killed Superman back in the 90s and has reappeared on occasions to be something of a bane of existence for many superheroes, will be fighting Supergirl and the Martian Manhunter come this summer. Brad, what did you think about this story. For me, I'm juiced at the idea of this team up, but I wanted to get your take first.
Yeah, and it does not look like he's going to be some kind of king of hell, ruling over some demons.
I'm getting a vibe of that.
That's that picture on the throne. That's an interesting take on the character. I was never too big of a Doomsday fan because it just seemed like, as much as the Death of Superman was such a classic story, I kind of always wish they would use the villain that everybody already knew instead of creating a new character. I would say the same thing about Nightfall and Bane, but Bane, to me, Bane has taken off a life of his own that Doomsday never has. But this, like I said, this whole King of Hell thing, ruling over some demons, seems interesting. And I want to see how Superman and Martian Manhunter, of all characters, come together to defeat him. So I think it's going to be, especially if he is the King of Hell, how, you know, Martian Manhunter and Fire, I don't think that's going to go together too well. So that'll be an interesting take. So yeah, it could be a fun story. It's good to have the character back. What about you?
Yeah, I'm interested in this one. I mean, one, you're definitely on it with the that great cover. And just for a reference, I'm going to pull that one up for you. There is our Doomsday sitting on his throne, looking quite surrounded by skulls and things like that. Great covers. I'm tempted to get a couple of them. I do agree with what you said. It was sort of a frustration that Doomsday had to be like created and appeared and then kill Superman and not to have the same sort of endurance and longevity that we've enjoyed from Bane regarding Nightfall. Even when they did bring the character back, it was, well, it still didn't have the same impact that I feel Bane stories do. Even if you think of the most recent one and his involvement in the death of Alfred, so many significant things like that. Like, by comparison, Doomsday is such a brutish sort of character. Now, I am hooked with this idea of it being A, a one-shot, and B, Dan Waters. Hooked me with Dan Waters right from the get-go. I just grabbed Seasons Have Teeth, his work on Arkham World, stuff like that. I mean, there's something about someone who can do that beautiful macabre that was really kind of cool when you were like in high school and college and kind of dark and you know, this like stream of consciousness kind of voice, but he does it with such a wonderful finesse and recognition of like, okay, you can enjoy the chaos and the madness, but you also have to like tell a compelling story. And he does that so well. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how he takes the ideas you mentioned. Martian Manhunter, not a fan of Fire. Did in the 90s, they had a great storyline where he tries to like overcome it, works with a villain, has some interesting developments there. Supergirl playing an interesting role as well. And then, yes, Doomsday ruling over hell. And then, like I said, Dan Waters, beautiful art. I'll get it because, yeah, like I said, Dan Waters, pretty much that's it. But I think there also should be some interest because now I'm curious. I want to see what he can do with that character. It's like when they tell the stories about Grant Morrison being like, yeah, that character doesn't interest me. And then suddenly like, but I have an idea. And then he does something and you're like, yeah, brilliant. Of course, have more ideas. So I'm always intrigued and hopeful with that. And in the meantime, I can get excited about the idea of Wonder Woman's daughter, Trinity, appearing in our next story, the debut in a landmark 800th issue. Brad, 800th issue, Trinity, Wonder Woman's daughter, go.
Yeah, this 800th issue is really ramping up to be something special. You know, we've gotten some creative team information and, you know, we always talk about how good DC anthology books are, but this story in particular may have some lasting effect. You can't bring Wonder Woman's daughter into the picture and not have it affect the greater DC universe in really ways. So it's going to be a major character. And I just want to get into Flicky Fashions for a minute and say I'm really liking the design of the character's costume, because you get a little Wonder Woman, you get a little bit of Donna Troy with the stars, you get a little Wonder Girl. So it's like everything in this really, really nice amalgam in the costume. So I'm curious what they're going to do with this character. And it's in Tom King's hands, so I'm sure it's going to go great places. But I do have a feeling this is going to be a character that sticks around. similar to Damian Wayne. But Damian Wayne, it was easy because you could just make him the new Robin. So this is going to be a little bit more of a challenge because you already have a Wonder Girl that fans are loving with Yara Floor. So, but I do think this is going to be a character that's going to be around for a while. What about you?
I definitely think it's going to get crowded. I mean, Nubia, Yara Flora, you've got Diana Prince, you've got you've got a lot of different wonders. So I'm curious how that's going to work out with Wonder Woman's daughter playing in. As you mentioned, you know, the talents of Tom King are certainly a great place to start with bringing a character to life like this and what kind of a story you're going to tell. Daniel Samper's art, I mean, gorgeous. Brad was talking about this gorgeous image, trying to bring it up. And I can definitely see all the things that you're talking about there, right? You know, the Donna Troy influence, as well as influences of Wonder Woman's costume over the decades. Also, you can see a mix of things going in where it's like, yeah, I can see that. It works well. I like it. I'm curious about the character, sort of this idea of how they're going to be introduced, what role they're going to play. And I think you brought up a great point. What's the longevity like? What's the role of this character in comparison to someone like Damian Wayne and the impact that they can have on the universe? I mean, come on. It's most recently Damian who's been kicking things off with the whole Lazarus storyline and the island and now the planet. And goodness, what else? So could we have a similar sort of impact from Trinity? Time will tell. What I recommend, get your copy 800th issue and get back to us. Let us know what you did, what you thought. We've got two more stories for our comic book news. The next one, Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, Horror, and Night Terrors. Oh, goodness. Oh, my. That's quite a collection. Lions, tigers, and such. We've got new horror-fueled makeovers. Flicky Fashions, he gave you all the insights you were looking for on Trinity. What can he tell you about Night Terrors? Brad, I leave it to you, my good friend.
That Batman is one of the coolest redesigns of Batman I think I've ever seen. The bat coming out of his mouth, the nice slick suit. That looks very super anime influenced. And the only, it looks like we got some body horror going on. And the only better person at body horror than General Manga is David Cronenberg. So if this is kind of that anime horror influenced, I think that that's going to be something that's going to be really cool. The Superman and Wonder Woman, yeah, okay. The Wonder Woman seems really out there. The more skull head, that seems like the very, very far from any Wonder Woman that I've ever seen. So I'm kind of curious what that's going to lead to. Same way with Superman. So this story is going to be another one that's going to be very interesting. What about you?
I'm curious how this one's going to shake out. Yeah, so for those images, let's see if I can keep the glare off, right? So we've got our Bruce Wayne, Batman over here. We've got our Superman. Yeah, and with that Wonder Woman, that's got like a Shiva vibe to it with the additional arms and swords. And then also some very interesting choices regarding the mask. Superman's thing with like the angel Lucifer wings. and as you pointed out, a very intriguing design. This all coming from Dan Mora. Grabbed these images off of Twitter as from the story. Looks really interesting. I'm interested. I'm glad Brad was here to tell you a little bit more about it. Because when it comes to fashion, Flicky Fashion's always the best place to go, always the right direction. And I'm a little concerned with the number of titles necessary in order to keep up with this storyline. But if the fashion's going to be like this, that could be enough reason. Definitely going to be some covers I'm looking for if they feature any of these characters in these new designs. And with some of the great talent we've seen put them together, that would be pretty righteous. You'll have to let me know what you guys think if you end up getting in those covers or your thoughts about these designs. How did I, Brad, and I do? I'm ready to be picked apart. Brad, don't try and argue with the man's flicky fashions. Just leave it at that. However, with that in mind, we do have our final comic book story on the list for this week. And it's Green Lantern's new villain is wearing a powerful and familiar armor. I'll give you a hint. The first letter is an M. Yep, that's all the time you got. With that, Brad, what did you think of this announcement and yet another opportunity for Flicky Fashion's weigh-in?
I like the choice that it's a Manhunter armor. Manhunters in general were always, to me, some of the more enigmatic and powerful characters in the DC universe. Their history was really cool, how ancient they were. They were there before the Green Lanterns, and they always did seem very powerful. And it brought up to mind, it's been a while since we've seen the Manhunter, but wasn't it the crossover event Millennium where there were secret Manhunters implanted in heroes' lives that revealed themselves? I think that was Millennium. And that just brought back the story, and I really like that story. So I'm kind of interested to see what the connection is with this armor and this character, especially given the Manhunter's history with the Green Lanterns. So, I think this Dawn of DC is going to be off to a really good start.
Well, I'm glad I got to hear your insights on the design. I'm intrigued by it. I think it's definitely an interesting update on the Manhunter character, who's played two different roles. You know, we've got the Manhunters from Green Lantern, but then we also had Mark Shaw and the Manhunters group. Both have had recent appearances, whether you're talking about Bendis's Leviathan with the Mark Shaw version, or even Tom King's Danger Road, is what I'm thinking of? I think it's Danger Road. Recently has a Manhunter character from that version. But the Green Lantern ones, I mean, these were the Guardians' first protectors. These were the first to protect the universe until they went too far. So I'm interested in this new design. I think it's going to be an interesting development with the character. And I also like Donna DC, you know, picking up this storyline for Green Lanterns. I mean, whether it was Brightest Day or Blackest Night, you kind of always felt like the Manhunters were just kind of hanging around in some form or another. So getting another version of the story and the idea of finding the armor off of Terra for boy. So great developments with that. I feel like it's going to be a fun story. Great combinations. And what a great finale to this week's episode. Brad, can't thank you enough for joining me, man, for episode number 176. With all those fashion insights and all of your wit and wisdom, I can only imagine folks are going to want to follow up with you. Where's all the places they can do it? Where can you direct them to say, hey, ask a question, send a word?
Yeah, you can find me writing news and reviews at DCComicsNews.com. I've also got a few things up at Josh's other site, Mark with the Movie Blog. Some reviews up there on this podcast, and I say this every week. On the Mad Love Harley Quinn podcast that we've got to get back to recording soon. I'm not ready to give up on it quite yet. So look for that down the line. And you can follow me on Twitter at FlickyB1. And where can people find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter as One More Singleton, on Instagram as Seth the Writer, or just type Seth Singleton and Linktree into a search engine. That's another easy way to do it. You can find me writing comics at hapsy.com with Greedy Greg, or you can find news and reviews that I wrote for DC Comics News, just giving me a search in the search bar. Beyond that, I'd say redirect all your efforts from that point into keeping up and catching up with all the great things from DC Comics News, whether it is using the at symbol, DC Comics News, for all your social media, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, Tumblr, all that fun stuff. Just use the at DC Comics News handle and you'll be all set. You can also make sure when it comes to YouTube and others, you subscribe so you can get episodes like this. And when it comes to our podcast, DC Comics News, go ahead and check us out. You'll get the audio version of this, other great programs, including previous episodes of Mad Love. Laugh, enjoy, then harass us to keep it going. We need it. We'll appreciate it. And we can also make sure that you will always have access to new content, like our weekly episodes, like I Am the Night, hosted by Mr. Steve J. Ray and Adam Ray, and all their great insights to a classic Batman the Animated Series. With that, it's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed hanging out. I hear the door opening. That means dinner has come home. I'm ready to sign off. And with that, Brad and I only have one last thing we always like to leave you with, and that is to always
read
more comics. There it is. All right, guys. Thanks so much for hanging out. Can't wait to join you next time, Brad. Always a pleasure, buddy.